Now, with the latest from the world of technology, this is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenech.
Lots to talk about.
Tech Guide.
It's a very well-rounded product, combines great design, great technology, lots of excellent features.
Tech Guide.
This is why Samsung has seen a huge surge, why their profits are up.
Keeping you updated and educated, this is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is not an ultrabook. If you're looking for something small, slim and lightweight, then you need to look elsewhere.
Tech Guide.
Probably one of the most impressive little devices I've seen in quite a while.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenech.
Hello and welcome to Tech Guide, episode 98, the podcast that keeps you updated and educated every week about the latest consumer technology. Thanks for listening and thanks for downloading. My name is Stephen Fenech and I'm the editor of the website techguide.com.au. On this week's show, we're going to talk about Google's new Chromecast that's finally available in Australia. Facebook has some new security changes and we'll talk to an expert photographer, Louis Perez, who's actually legally blind. In the Tech Guide reviews, we're going to run our eye over the new ultra-high definition smart LED TV from LG and the new Samsung wireless speakers. In the Tech Guide interview, we're going to chat with Jonathan Brassard. He's a security research engineer, which is a nice way of saying hacker, about the new Watch Dogs game. And it's all brought to you by Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi products. Plenty to talk about, so let's get cracking. Well, Google's latest product, the Chromecast, is finally landing in Australia. It'll be available from this Wednesday, May the 28th. Now, the Chromecast, for those who don't know what I'm talking about, is a HDMI dongle. So that fits into your television, creates its own little wireless hotspot, and then you can link to it using an Android or even an iOS device to stream content. It's kind of like a miniaturized Apple TV, but works with Android devices as well. It's also quite small. It looks like an oversized key, and there's a HDMI connection in one end, and there's a USB at the other end to charge it or to keep it powered up. But the Wi-Fi connection it creates then allows users to share the content from their smartphones and tablets and laptops. You can even send favorite TV shows, movies, music from the various online services that we enjoy. But rather than having to watch it on a smaller screen, you can now watch it on your TV, which, let's face it, is the best screen in the house. And with TV screens getting even bigger, I think a lot of us like to watch our entertainment on that larger display. It is going to be available from this Wednesday. It's going to be priced at $49. Now, this product's been available in the US since last year. So a lot of Australians who've come back from the US have often picked up a Chromecast. It only costs $35. So a lot of them have willingly pulled out the cash to bring home the Chromecast and enjoy its many features. The features that don't work here, of course, work with things that aren't here anyway, Netflix and other subscription services like that. But it does offer the basics. Not yet known whether any Australian services are going to take advantage of Chromecast, but once we get our hands on it this week, we'll tell you all about it. The Google Chromecast coming this week is going to be available from Dick Smith and JB Hi-Fi and possibly other retailers, but they're the two that we know for sure. If you want to check out the Chromecast, you can do that. There's a little video. You can check that out at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenech.
Well, Facebook is back in the news again and all about privacy, but you know what? This is actually a good story. We've got no bad news to report on this little segment about Facebook privacy. Facebook are actually taking a more active role in making the privacy settings even easier, even more suitable for users. They've made a few changes to their privacy settings. The main one being the fact that now when new users sign up to Facebook, their privacy settings are now set to friends instead of by default being set to public. Now, anyone who'd previously joined Facebook and not known that were inadvertently sending all their statuses that were made available to the general public. So now it is by default to friends. Previously, it was by default to public. So good news that Facebook have done that. Anyway, when we post our statuses, at the underneath the status window is a drop-down menu that actually allows us to choose status by status who actually sees that. It is going to default to friends. But if you want to make it public, you can. There is going to also, though, be a little pop-up. So there will be, if you are posting to your settings are public, a pop-up will appear to say, look, sorry to interrupt. We see that you've set your post to public. We just make sure that you're reaching the audience that you are intending to reach. So people may have left public there by mistake, and they're then warned that they can change it to friends. If it is public, you intended to keep it, then you can just ignore that, skip that little check, and then you can post away. Another little change is the fact that Facebook now also allows for anonymous logins. There's plenty of other apps that ask for you to sign in with Facebook. And the problem with that is that a lot of users are uncomfortable sharing all their private information with an app they've just downloaded. So what Facebook has allowed now is the ability to log in anonymously to these other apps so that you're not giving away your private information. You can still join the other app and use it, but now they don't know all your personal information, so you're not sharing all of that. That's going to make a lot of users even more comfortable. But good on Facebook for taking the initiative here and making privacy even more transparent and easier for people to navigate. Previously, it was a little bit hard to drill down. There were pages and pages of settings. Facebook then actually reduced the number of pages, made it a little bit easier, but this takes it even further, and our hats off to Facebook for doing that. You can see the screenshots and the instructions on how you too can make sure your Facebook is private and you're sending stuff to your friends only. You can do that by reading our story at techguide.com.au. Now, we've got an interesting chat with Louis Perez. Now, he is an accomplished photographer. He's also an Apple Distinguished Educator and an Inclusive Learning Consultant. So he's very highly fancied. He's been giving some seminars here in Australia as well. But one little difference about Louis Perez is that he's actually legally blind. He suffers from retinitis pigmentosa, also known as tunnel vision. So that means he's got less than 10 degrees of vision. So that actually makes him legally blind. But despite that, he's actually an expert photographer. Now, people are asking, how does he do this? Well, he actually is a user of iOS and OS X with Apple. They have accessibility settings. So that allows people with disability, so you may be hearing impaired or blind, or you may have some physical kind of disability. There are accessibility features that allow users with these disabilities to still make full use of the product. In Louis's case, he can still take his photographs, and I have to say, you can see his stuff on Instagram. There is a link on our story on Tech Guide. He is a brilliant photographer, and hard to believe that he's blind. But we had an interesting chat with him, and here's what he had to say earlier. Well, Louis, thanks for joining me. Welcome to Australia. You're here as an Apple Distinguished Educator, talking about accessibility features on the iPhone and talking about photography. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
I'm an Apple Distinguished Educator. We're a group of educators all around the world. And most of us have a specialty. And in my case, my specialty is inclusive design and accessibility. And so I've been doing a number of presentations here to groups such as Vision Australia, the Royal Institute for Deaf and Blind Children, and the Cerebral Palsy Alliance.
Okay.
In addition to doing some trainings at Apple stores, just sharing the story of how the Apple accessibility features that are built in really help out people with disabilities and give them a number of options that they can use to access information and really be able to do what they want to do, which, in my case, that's photography.
Okay, so just tell us, you've got retinitis pigmentosa, is that right? So you've got 10 degrees of vision.
Actually, less than that.
Okay.
Probably around 7 to 8 degrees.
Right.
So to explain to your listeners, retinitis pigmentosa, another way that it's known is tunnel vision.
Uh-huh.
So I have some vision right in the middle, but I can't see any around me. Basically, I tell people when I look at somebody's mouth, their eyes disappear.
Okay.
When I look at their eyes, their mouth disappears. So
right.
I can't see a complete face.
So you're legally blind, is that right?
Correct. I'm legally blind.
Yet you're such an avid photographer, and the reason why that's helped along by these accessibility features on iOS and OS 10, is that right?
Correct. Very much so. Just the fact that I can on my iPhone turn on the voiceover screen reader that's built in, and it can tell me how many faces are on the screen as I'm trying to take a photo. So even if I were completely blind, I could still take a really nice photo where the person's in the frame. It can tell me the number of faces, their size, based on the distance, and so on.
What about when you're shooting? I've seen some of your photos, by the way, on Instagram. They're excellent pictures. What about when you're shooting landscapes and other things like that? How does the accessibility features help you in those cases?
Most of the time, one of the features that I use is invert colors, which basically gives you a high contrast mode. And since I have a problem with my disability also with light and uh-huh. lighting, that makes it a lot easier for me to see the contrast in the scene. Yeah. But then I also just take a lot of photos. And that's the beauty of digital, is that you can take a lot of photos and then find one that's good and work that one up and then share them with everybody.
Excellent. So you're here, you're speaking in Apple stores around Australia and giving these little briefings on how to access these features. How's that been going?
That's been going great. The turnout has been great. I've been really impressed. I know that there's a lot of accessibility work that's being done in Australia already. And so it's just nice to be able to connect with that work and bring my own perspective to it, not only as a person from the United States, but also as a person with a disability
mm-hmm.
and how those features have really benefited me as a person with a disability.
What are some of those other features, Lewis, that have helped you?
Well, number one, there's the voiceover screen reader,
yep.
for sure. I use that to listen to some of the controls and some of the apps that I use. Invert colors, which I already mentioned, and then zoom, which allows you to magnify what's on the screen. And that's probably the one that I use the most, since I still have some central vision, and that allows me to magnify so that I can see it more clearly.
And I understand you've also written a book.
I have. It's a book on universal design for learning and accessibility. It's called Mobile Learning for All. And so universal design for learning takes that concept of accessibility and applies it to how we design learning experiences for students.
Okay. Is there another book you've written called A Touch of Light? Is that your book as well?
That is my book.
Okay.
And that's a little bit different because with that book, I took a digital first stance.
Uh-huh.
Basically, I'm releasing it as a digital only version.
Yep.
And so it's on the iBookstore. Anybody can go ahead and download it. And it's all about adaptive photography. And so that provides the context for learning about the accessibility features on these iOS devices.
Okay. And how did you come to be noticed by Apple to start giving these briefings?
Well, I used to do a website called Tech Ease, where I posted tutorials for teachers focusing on education and accessibility. And so that's the way that I came to Apple's attention. And then they have a call for applications for educators.
Okay.
And so I did a video where basically I talked about these features, but it wasn't until the end that I revealed that I was actually legally blind.
Okay.
As a surprise at the end, right?
Yeah, well, that was a great payoff then, wasn't it? But are people surprised though that when you tell them, that obviously when they know about your disability and you are legally blind, are they surprised when you tell them that you're actually a photographer?
They are, very much so, and especially when I'm walking around and people come across me with my white cane,
yeah,
because I use a white cane, and they notice me trying to take a photo. It really, they don't know what to do with that sometimes, and that's really what I'm going for.
Okay.
I'm going for that idea that, look, just because I'm visually impaired doesn't mean that I can't be a photographer.
Absolutely. Well, that's what this system proves. But what do some of these people in the street tell you? What do they offer assistance or what do they do?
Sometimes they just kind of stare. And then sometimes they come over and ask me questions. You know, what are you doing? Uh-huh. How are you doing it? And that's really the most satisfying to me is when they ask me, how do you do it?
And they must be very surprised when they find out how.
Yes, exactly. And so for me, that's what it's all about with photography. That's why I do it. It's really to start people asking questions, and then those questions lead to conversations. And through those conversations, we can change perceptions and attitudes about disability.
Fantastic. Lewis, tell us how can we find out more about you? Do you have a website? Tell us how we can get in, see what you're doing and get in contact with you.
Well, absolutely follow my photography. So if you go to Instagram, you can find me as LFP1211. And then I do have a website. It's LuisPerezOnline.com.
Great. We really appreciate your time, Lewis. Enjoy your time here in Australia. And it just goes to show that, you know, a disability doesn't have to get in the way of you actually taking great photographs and using the full the device to its full potential. Appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, and I appreciate it.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Finney.
Tech Guide.
The Tech Guide podcast is proudly supported by Netgear, Australia's number one Wi-Fi brand. And they've just released their new EX6200 AC1200 high-powered Wi-Fi range extenders. We've heard of the EX6100, the smaller Wi-Fi range extender, but the EX6200 is a larger device. Looks a little bit like a modem, but it actually expands your network into those darker areas of your home where your Wi-Fi range and strength just isn't up to par. So now you can push Wi-Fi to every corner of the home with the new 802.11ac standard, thanks to this new Wi-Fi range extender from Netgear. It's perfect for your home theater setup, so you can now bring the internet to your smart TV, to your gaming console, to your set-top box. There are five Ethernet ports on the back, so you can stream HD video content from even connected USB hard drives. You can connect a hard drive to the device through the USB 3 port. It's also got a powerful dual-core processor on board and high power amplifier, so you'll have Wi-Fi wherever you want it throughout your home. You can get the EX6200, the fastest AC Wi-Fi range extender, is available now from Netgear. You can check it out at netgear.com.au/max Wi-Fi.
Tech Guide.
Now, a Tech Guide review with Stephen Finney.
Tech Guide. Our first product in the Tech Guide reviews is LG's new 65-inch ultra-high-definition smart LED TV. That's quite a mouthful, as they all are. The model number is the UB980T. Now, we reviewed the 65-inch model in this U series, and I have to say it did live up to my expectations. I was very impressed with this TV. Has that ultra-high definition resolution, which is actually four times the resolution of a regular full HD television. Now, the LG design is actually very understated, the very thin bezel around the outside, so hardly noticeable once that brilliant TV screen is turned on. Also, along both down the left and right sides of the screen are Harman Kardon speakers. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But picture quality, I really was very hard to fault the LG. There's a lot of technology working behind the scenes to make that so. First of all, the Triple XD engine, which actually is the processor that decides the color, contrast and clarity of the picture, and I have to say it does a very good job. Not a lot of UHD content at the moment, but it is coming. So buying a TV like this actually future-proofs your viewing options, because down the track, when there's plenty of UHD content, also known as 4K content, you're going to be able to enjoy every single pixel on this television. The TV does also have upscaling capabilities, so they've got a Ultra HD Upscaling Engine Pro on board. Now, this struggled a little bit with standard definition TV. It actually, having such a large screen, a 65-inch screen with standard def, it actually highlighted all the flaws in that standard definition TV signal. But it's a high-definition signal. It did improve it slightly, but it really stretched out when we were watching Blu-ray disc at the upscaling brought it to near ultra high definition quality. In my review, I did find though the picture lacked what I call a little warmth. It was a bit cold, the picture, so needed a little bit more warmth in the settings. And the beauty of this TV is that it allows you to go step by step through your picture process and decide. It gives you options. Do you like this or do you like this or like this? So you choose the version of that particular menu, so it's brightness and different color combinations and things like that. And by the end of that process, you end up with a picture that is bang on your taste. I was very impressed, though, at the end of that process. The picture was exactly how we liked it, and we quite enjoyed it. Color was not too oversaturated, natural hues in the skin tones. It was black levels were also impressive. Clarity with the right content looked amazing. So really impressed with LG's improvement over the years. I have to say, over the last 4 or 5 years, the LG picture quality has really improved. Wasn't a huge fan a few years ago, but boy, have they got their act together now. Viewing angles were quite good as well. They've got a new technology called IPS, which is in-plane switching, which means you can watch this TV at any angle and still enjoy it. Now, onto the audio quality. One of my criticisms for the Samsung curved Ultra HD TV was the speakers were only good. They weren't great. Now, what I really like about the LGs, they've actually taken the time to equal the picture quality with the audio quality. And what they've done, they've partnered with Harman Kardon, a very well-known name in high-quality audio, and their speakers are actually, there's 10 three-way speakers among these two on either side. And that adds a real richness to the experience. Sound is a large part of the experience. So while you're having a great image, if the sound's terrible, it's really going to play down that experience. But what I like that LG have actually taken the time and made the effort to create a decent audio quality to go with the excellent picture quality as well. 6 different sound modes, so great for playing games or watching a movie. There's modes to suit whatever you're doing. The 65-inch TV from LG, the UB980T, it's priced at $5,499, which when you consider you're getting an Ultra HD TV, a 65-inch Ultra HD TV, smart TV, so you don't forget you got all that connectivity, it is not a bad deal. But before I finish, I really should mention WebOS, which is a new operating system on board the LG, which really addresses that problem that's been recognized in the past that people really don't get the most out of their TV. A lot of people struggle to get to connect it to the internet, for example. They also don't make use of all the features. But what WebOS does, it takes you step by step through the process, connects the TV to the internet, and once you're done, it doesn't abandon you there. It actually makes the day-to-day use of the TV really simple and intuitive. There's a magic remote, so it's like having a mouse cursor on the screen. So simply just waving this remote control in the air and pressing on the various menu options, and it's so simple to navigate. So you can see all your apps, all the other options, live TV, web browser, you can see all the other connected sources, Skype, there's a camera built in. So really, LG has nailed the ease of use there thanks to that new WebOS system. But check out my review at techguide.com.au. You can check out my star rating out of 5. You can do that, as I said, at techguide.com.au. Now, Samsung last week had an event to launch their new wireless multi-room speakers. Now, the M5 and the M7 were launched last week. Now, these take after the Sonos speakers. That's probably a reference point that people will recognize. Sonos were the first company to create this wireless speaker system to easily create a multi-room audio experience. Well, Samsung has come to the party with 2 speakers, the M5 and the M7. Now, these are obviously wireless and have Bluetooth on board as well, and obviously are operated by an Android or iOS app. And Samsung hasn't shut the door on iOS users. They've still allowed that compatibility, which I think is a smart move. It's also got NFC on board. That's near-field communication. Has Bluetooth, as I mentioned, and, of course, Wi-Fi. So it's very easy to connect to the network. I think you need a small hub to connect several to your network, and then it's all controlled using the app. Now, what Samsung has to its advantage here is that the company also makes TVs and soundbars that can also work in concert with the M5 and the M7. So what you do, for example, if you have a Samsung TV, a late model TV, you can actually link the speakers to that TV. If you have a soundbar, you can also add the speakers, the M5 or the M7, and make them either side speakers, rear speakers. You can create a multi-speaker system for a true surround sound. So what that allows, it's all obviously controlled by the wireless multi-room smartphone app, which, as I mentioned, is both Android and iOS. Now, you do need a Samsung TV for this to work with, or a Samsung Blu-ray disc player. So if you can tap into the Samsung Blu-ray disc player that may be connected to another brand TV, you can still enjoy the speakers joining in on that experience. Of course, if you've got the late model Samsung TVs, that's going to work straight out of the box. The M5 and M7, I did have a listen to the speakers, very decent quality, really good bass levels, and terrific mid-range as well. Of course, they can use they can link up to streaming music services. All the popular streaming services are on board: Spotify, RDO, Deezer, Pandora, as well as obviously being able to access your own music as well. So the Samsung speakers, they are triangular in shape. They can be rested flat, so that the base, it does sit on its base, but it is also possible to extend a small stand on the side so they can be rested in an upright position. They look pretty stylish either way. They can also be wall-mounted. I saw an interesting wall mount at the launch where the speaker was actually positioned in a corner. So one edge, each edge was on a different wall. So it did actually look quite nice. The speaker was obviously aimed towards the middle of the room, but it did look pretty neat up there installed in the corner of the room near the ceiling. The M5 is the smaller speaker. That's priced at $399. The M7 is the larger speaker, priced at $499. Now, these are available now. It is part of Samsung's strategy sort of to grow their ecosystem. A lot of people are obviously going to inevitably compare these speakers to the Sonos systems. Sonos has some advantages, like more music services that are linked on board, but Samsung also has Bluetooth on board and the ability to link them with a television. Now, you can link the Sonos system to TVs using their soundbar, but it is a little bit more involved. Samsung have made quite a seamless system. If you do stay within the Samsung family, naturally they're going to do that for their customers. It's going to be available in black and white, the M5 and M7 wireless multi-room speakers. You can check out more information at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. Now, a Tech Guide interview.
Tech Guide.
Our Tech Guide interview, the second for this week's show, by the way. I think it's not the first time we've had two interviews on the same show, but it is a rarity here on the Tech Guide podcast. Our second chat, though, is with an interesting gentleman by the name of Jonathan Brossard. Now, his official title is a security research engineer. Now, that's another word for a hacker. But like, as I mentioned in our interview that you'll hear in a moment, there are two sides to hacking. It's like the Force in Star Wars, I say. It's like there's the light side and there's the dark side. Jonathan is on the light side, and he actually works for various companies, testing out their systems, checking for security flaws. And, of course, on the dark side, you have people who are trying to hack into systems for malicious purposes. They're trying to gain some financial information, some money, your personal information. So there are two sides to that coin. But Jonathan Brossard was involved in the launch of the new game Watch Dogs from Ubisoft, a new open world game set in Chicago. Players assume the character of Aiden Pierce, who is a master hacker who can control the city's central operating system. And what he does, he can actually manipulate the system to suit his needs. The backstory is that his family, there was a violent tragedy in his family, and he's trying to exact his revenge over the perpetrators. And to do that, he needs to control the city using his hacking skills, so he can control things like cameras and public transport vehicles and the cell phone network, and he can locate people when and where he needs. But Jonathan cast quite an interesting light into the real world of hacking. He highlighted the kind of the Hollywood version that was really not quite as realistic, but he does praise Watch Dogs as offering a more realistic approach, not 100% realistic, but closer than the blown-up versions you tend to see in Hollywood films. Jonathan Brossard is French-born. You'll hear from his accent in a moment, but he is actually now Sydney-based and works with several companies, including banks and other institutions, car companies. He has quite a resume, but his skills, as I said, are used for good. They are used to strengthen security systems, and as he mentioned, to test the strength of a system, you need to try and break it, which is what he talks about in the interview, and here's what he had to say earlier. Jonathan, thanks for joining us. We're here to talk about Watchdog, the new game that's coming out next week. That's all about hacking and the whole environment behind that. I think the game is quite interesting. It starts next week. But you are, in fact, a security research engineer, or is that another word for a hacker? Tell us a little bit about what you do.
So thanks for having me. Good morning. Yeah, I'm a security researcher and a computer hacker. I have a daily job where I try to help companies secure their networks and their new products. And on the side, I do a bit of research that I present in conferences and things like this to help the security community grow.
Yep.
And I even organize a couple of conferences in Hawaii and Paris.
Sure thing. Now, to me, I think hackers, it's a little bit like the Force in Star Wars. There's the light side, the good side, and the dark side. So you're obviously part of the good side. But there are a lot of threats out there. There's a lot of people out there, a lot of hackers who are trying to get our information, sort of trying to get our money, trying to do things like that. How serious is the problem, and what do we need to do to stay safe?
So look, I'm not a great fan of this binary view of the world. I'm not George Bush. We're worth a bit better than that, seeing the world in black and white. But you're right. Like, what happens is, security in particular at nation state level has been described, there is this term called cyber war. And, the new doctrine for many countries is that it's just part of their arsenal. So not only they're not helping us secure the networks, but they're actually building tools and weapons to attack the internet.
Uh-huh.
And that would be the dark force.
But you would recognize the fact though that there is a threat out there on our, not only on our computers but also on our mobile devices too. Mobile devices are a threat, under threat as well.
Absolutely. If you take a smartphone, it's really a computer, and it's connected to the internet pretty much all day using 3G, 4G or whatever, and therefore it's susceptible to the same kind of attacks that a computer would be.
Because we do store a lot of our own information. We do our banking, we do our shopping. So it's a similar, like you said, it is a mini computer that could, that if we're not careful, can be attacked.
Absolutely.
And you're in your role, I take it that companies would use your services to boost their own security systems. Is that right?
Yeah, so the idea is when you build a new computer device or new services around, using computers, the things are so complex that even the people developing them don't master the technology from A to Z. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the only way we have to make programs or computer networks secure is to try to attack them and fix them. And it's an iterative process. Mm-hmm. Like, it's impossible to build something secure from scratch.
Yeah.
We have to try to break it and better it over time.
I guess just as there's security in the physical world, there needs to be security in the online and the virtual world as well. So tell us a little bit about the companies. I'd imagine the companies you're working with would be like financial institutions and banks and places like that. Is that right?
That's part of it. My clients in Australia are mostly in this sector. Our clients in Europe are more car manufacturers, energy companies, a number of very large companies, and IT companies in the US. So all those profiles are obviously very different. Like, you don't attack a nuclear plant the way you attack a bank.
Mm-hmm.
But all of this, even if the end user doesn't really care, we can expect these services, basic services, to be secure.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy a new car and it's connected to the internet, you actually don't expect that someone could break into your car and drive your car from the internet, do you?
No, I hope not. But we see the Hollywood version of hacking, and some of the things that hackers can do. There's been many movies made about this subject. How real is that? How so you mentioned it's probably not possible to drive someone else's car, but how real can these threats be?
So this is a brilliant question. Thanks for asking it. The reason I agreed to help discuss watchdogs is that precisely I think it's very different from the depiction of hackers, which have been happening for the past 20 years. We all know those movies like Hacker with Angelina Jolie or War Game with a 14-year-old launching ballistic missiles and all that.
Yeah, so you can't do that?
And the worst is the depiction of it. When you see, I remember in Die Hard 4, when people break into computers, the screen moves. Who believed it happened that way?
Yeah.
So in Watch Dog, precisely, the whole team has made a huge effort. It took them 5 years to develop the game, right? And they're 500 people, so it's serious manpower.
Sure.
And they spent a lot of time in trying to understand what is actually credible and what is happening in the industry. Uh-huh. So if you ask me things like, in the game you see, for instance, a lot of hacking cell phone networks, hacking into cars, hacking into satellites, hacking into CCTV cameras, and all of this are based on actual research that my peers and I have been doing.
So that's possible. You can do that.
So the point which is borderline, that in the game you can hack into anything in 2 seconds. In reality, we can hack in all of this, but it takes 6 months of research.
Right.
But hacking into any of this, like cars, it's been done before by Charlie Miller and Chris Valesek.
Okay.
The Prius, and they can actually drive your car using a computer.
But it takes months, not seconds. So Jack Bauer on 24, the show wouldn't be called 24, it'd be called 6 months. Is that what you're saying?
No point. Well, the idea is it takes 6 months to do the research.
Yeah.
Once you know what to do it and you've learned all the technology works, you can replicate it very easily.
Okay.
So it would take me 6 months to break into a new type of car, but once I know how to do it, I can do it literally in 2 seconds to the next car.
But in the meantime, there's people like yourself who the car company has on board to prevent these from happening. So it's a constant cat and mouse game, isn't it?
You would hope so. My clients do, but not every car manufacturer is actually very security conscious. Uh-huh. So, I wouldn't say that every car is secure. It's actually definitely not the case.
So you've obviously had a play of Watch Dogs. You've seen the game. So that is, you mentioned it is a bit more a realistic approach to the how it all works, the security works.
Yeah, even the environment, the climate, in the sense, the main characters are pretty dark. And it precisely remembers me of Berlin. You have a large security community in Berlin. It's one of the epicenters of hacking in the world.
Okay.
And people look a lot like in the game, really.
Yeah.
And in terms of making the hacks believable and realistic, when the main character has to take over the city, essentially he has to backdoor the data center of the city.
Yep. The city being Chicago, is that right? Chicago is the city.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. The game is rooted in Chicago, so part of what the gamers have to do is find the data center, enter the data center, break into a computer, and backdoor it. And that's actually we would do it for real.
Sure.
Okay. So, that's kind of interesting compared to, like you mentioned, the depiction in mainstream media we've seen over years, which was actually pretty bad.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people think that's real and that Bruce Willis and Matthew Broderick have got all these powers. It is Hollywood. It is good to hear, though, that they are taking quite a bit of license with that. And, of course, it's Hollywood we're talking about here anyway, but... what are we like? We're living in a connected world, and everyone's connected to everything. We're on computers and smartphones. What does the future hold? Is the security threat ever going to go away, or what can we see down the track? Can we relax eventually, or we always have to be on guard?
Look, it all comes down to hardcore science, right? Computer hacking is engineering, really. It is engineering, and it's sexy engineering, but it's just science. It turns out that building secure systems are we're not ready to get there. It's not going to happen anytime soon.
Yeah.
Because of the way programming language are done, we cannot prove that a program is correct. Mm-hmm. And hardware is even more complicated. We cannot prove that hardware is working properly either. So no, it's here to stay, and the trend is more, you know, we're moving towards an economy where automation and computers play a role.
Sure.
In particular, indirectly, I think people know these days that if you put information on Facebook or if you put information on the internet, well, it's gonna potentially be made public and you don't master it anymore.
Absolutely.
But how about your indirect exposure to the internet? Because every time you take, say, public transportation, mm-hmm. you take a train, for instance, well, the train is connected to the internet and is keeping information about you.
Sure.
Every time you make a payment, say, you know, I'm French myself. Let's say we're making a payment from Australia to Europe. Well, the thing is gonna go over the internet. You don't see it, but that's your indirect exposure to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And this digital footprint, like they call it in the game,
sure,
it's a brilliant finding, this word. They coined this term, but it's actually very good. Well, that's what concerns me most, because we have very little understanding of this indirect footprint.
Mm-hmm.
And since we don't even know it does exist, like, it's very hard for end users to protect themselves.
Sure. But we need to stay vigilant, don't we? But very interesting to talk to you, Jonathan. Appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us on Tech Guide.
Have a good day.
And that's our show for another week. You can read more about everything we've talked about at techguide.com.au. We want to give a special thanks too to our sponsors, Netgear, the brand you can trust for all your Wi-Fi needs. If you want to stay connected, the answer is Netgear. Thanks for listening. It's been fantastic having your company again. We look forward to you joining us again next week. So until then, stay safe and stay connected.